I'd like to welcome everyone to the Westchester area's first convention. We'd like to open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer for those who know it and care to join. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know. NA has no must, but the hotel has some rules. Request the guests under the age of 18 are accompanied by a parent at all times. Please ensure that they are not left unattended at any time. Areas that we particularly want guests to pay attention are the swimming pool, fitness center, and entrances of the hotel. Our hotel is 100% non-smoking. Therefore, please ensure that no one is smoking within the facility. There will be designated smoking spots outside the hotel where smoking is allowed. If a guest smokes in any of our room, a fine of $300 per day will be applied to the credit card in the reservation. Pets 25 pounds or less are allowed. Pet fee of $50 will apply. Pets have to be kept on a leash at all times. I've asked a friend to read how it works.
Hi, fam. My name's Anthony. I'm a grateful recovering.
Hey, Anthony.
You want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, and you are ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction and our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our lives, the will in our lives, over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God reward and respect the character. Seven, we humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so to injure them or others. 10. We continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. We thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying for only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practicing principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There's one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that the approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe the sooner we face our problems within our society and everyday living, just that much faster to become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you are like us, you know that one is too many and a thousand never enough. We put great emphasis on this, but we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover.
Thank you. I've asked a friend to read the 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous.
My name is Omar, I'm an addict.
Hey, Omar.
12 traditions of NA. We keep what we have only with business. And just as the freedom for the individual comes from the 12 steps, so does freedom from the group springs from our tradition. As long as our ties that bind us together are stronger than those that will tear us apart, all will be well. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. Two, by our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. Five, each group has one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Six, in any group are never endorsed, financed, or lend in any name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, and our service centers may employ special workers. 9, NA assets ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve. 10, Narcotics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the NA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions and reminds us of great principles before personality. Understanding these traditions comes slowly over a period of time. We pick up information as we talk to members and visit various groups. It isn't until we get involved with service that someone points out that personal recovery depends on NA unity, and that unity depends on how well we follow our traditions. The 12 traditions of NA are not negotiable. They are the guidelines that keep our fellowship alive and free. By following these guidelines in our dealings with others and society at large, we avoid many problems. This is not to say that our traditions eliminate all problems. We still have to face difficulties as they arise. Communication problems, differences of opinions, internal controversies, and troubles with individuals and groups outside the fellowship. However, when we apply these principles, we avoid some of the pitfalls. Many of our problems are like those that our predecessors had to face. Their hard-won experience gave birth to the traditions, and our own experience shows that these principles are just as valid today as they were when these traditions were formulated. Our traditions protect us from the internal and external forces that could destroy us. They are truly the ties that bind us together. It is only through understanding and application that they work.
Thanks. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma when NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross-addicted, or talking about living clean and sober. The clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not our differences. As our 11th tradition says, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. The primary purpose of our public relations effort is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to the still suffering addict. Members of this press are often attracted to our convention, and we welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last name in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If members of the press approach you, please direct them to the convention information booth located in the lobby of the convention center. I'd like to thank all the readers at this time to share her experience, strength, and hope on the seventh tradition and the seventh step. I give you Lavinia A. from New Jersey.
I'm an addict. My name is Lavinia.
Hello,
and I first want to thank God for getting everyone safe to this convention. I want to thank the Wagner area for inviting me to their first convention. I feel honored and privileged. And the topic is Seven Steps, Seven Tradition. And you know, whenever I, you know, have the opportunity to share on steps, I really try to look up some words because I'm not real good at meanings. I could baffle around it and make some, you know, meanings of it, but I really want to understand and share experience of what I'm talking about. And the seventh step talks about we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And really, I never knew what shortcomings was. Now I know, you know, it's the act out, but what the word really means. So I looked it up. And it says lacking, imperfections. Let me see, because I wrote it down. It says imperfection, weakness, deficiency, drawbacks, and flaws. And I said, wow, I really got a fractured personality, you know. And before I really got to the seventh step, I did a whole lot of acting, you know, out on me. because I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I was 33. You know, it was a lot of stuff that, you know, I didn't know about myself. You know, I didn't know about defects of character and all of that stuff. Just who I was thought was good enough. You know, I didn't know that I needed a personality change, a character change. I didn't know any of that stuff. You know, I came here just to stay clean. But the longer I stayed here, the more I knew that there was some other stuff going on after I put down the drug. You know, because I've been clean for 21 years, and I said, but I haven't picked up in a while. Why do I still respond and act that way? I can't say it's because I'm getting high, you know, because I haven't done that in a while, you know. And I find that most of my struggles in the seventh step is when I don't ask for God's help, when I try to fix it, manage it, control it. I'm talking about my behavior. You know, when I try to fix that and say I can stop and I can, you know, I won't do that this time, and it doesn't happen for me like that. You know, I get glimpses of days where I don't act out on the same behavior, but if I don't go to God when I see it coming, it's going to happen again. You know, what I find through my experience is in my relationships, I could see my behavior more than anything else. You know, my relationship, you know, on my job, my relationship with my children, my relationship with my husband, I could see where I really need to ask God humbly, please, you know. And sometimes I'm good, you know, at not responding and reacting, because that's what the seventh step talks about, how I react to different things, you know. And it's all, to me, a lot of it is based on how emotionally attached I am to it. Once I ask God to remove a lot of that, I'm able to respond in a more mature way. You would think at 54, I have some maturity levels where I won't act that way. No, not all the time, you know. And lately, and I'm going to share my experience where I'm at right now with the seventh step, I'm going through a lot of life changes, you know, emotionally, physically, you know, and my temperament is off. And, ooh, do I need God to help me, you know. I'm going to give you a prime example. I came, you know, me and my husband came, and he had some CDs, and I was listening to the radio, and he put the CD in. And my first response was to say, why you do that? Why you? I'm listening to the radio. I had to say to myself, it ain't that serious. You know, just it's music. You know, but depending on my temperament now, if I would have been a little more anxious and anxietied up, I'd have been like, why you do that? I'm listening to the radio. And it would have been an argument from there to here about the radio. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I really have to really stay in touch with, you know, my temperament, especially today. I go to God a lot. Sometimes I forget to humbly ask him before, you know, because I know how I'm going to respond sometimes to some things. And my example is, you know, I have 11-year-old, it's me, my husband, and it's me. And I'm the female, the woman in the house, and I live with two guys. And sometimes if I don't humbly go to God in my car before I walk in that door, it could be real ugly when I walk in. You know, some days I'm better. Soon as I pull up, I take a few minutes in the car and I go, God, I know when I walk in, things are not going to be all to my liking, but it ain't going to be that bad. Let me shut my mouth. Some days I'm good. Some days you can tell when I haven't prayed. I walk in, what's that over there? How come that's down there? Could you pick that up? Could you do this? How come the light is on? You could tell.
What?
You could tell. You know, and it's at those times, but that's the times I be looking at the little stuff. Like, I don't, you know, that I can handle that. I can handle when I walk in the door and keep my mouth shut. I can't handle that. Those are the times I need to humbly ask him to remove that. You know, because a lot of times I'm very intolerant, very impatient. You know, my patience for stuff is real short. And I said, why is it now? You know, but I understand that I got a lot of stuff going on with me right now physically. Now, it's not no major health issue, but going through my changes of what women go through, it's a major thing. So I'm so glad the men is in here, because if your woman is going through it, look, be a little more patient. Because that's the way it is, you know. And I don't use that as an excuse. I need to stay in touch. I need to stay in touch with my emotions, you know. I really try to, and I'm grateful that, you know, it's a step working process, and I will never be perfect, because it talks about my imperfections. And my perfections are the things that I'll never be perfect in. You know, I'm gonna act out in my humanness. But that's not an excuse to act out. You know, that's when I think I can handle it. You know, I put my big girl shoes on and I say I'm of age and I could do this, and, you know, I'm not going to act out and that behavior, and it doesn't. You know, I work with adolescent girls, right, from 15 to 18. Girls, on any day, I be wanting to say some stuff, because they can say some stuff. They could say, and my mouth, I really have to go, God, please don't let me tell her what my thinking say. Because I can hurt them, you know. And at that time, I asked him to soften my heart. That's what I've been asking him to do for me lately. I need him to soften my heart. I'm very rigid. Sometimes there's no in between. It's either black or it's white. It's either going to go this way or that way. It's no middle ground sometimes. And when I feel like that, I ask him to soften my heart, you know. So I work with adolescent girls, and they say some stuff. I'm telling you, I'm always being threatened, you know. But I know that when it really comes down to it, I'm going to handle mine, you know. I ain't supposed to. Right, I ain't supposed to touch them. I ain't supposed to. If they hit me, I'm supposed to call the police. Not in my thinking. Mm-mm. So this is what I say when they come at me. I go, God, please help me shut my mouth. It's not personal. She's really mad at her mother or her father. It's not me. But it all depends on where I'm at spiritually. If I ain't had a good day, I haven't prayed before I walked in. I haven't prayed when I got up and walked out the door and I came in there. Oh, they in for it. I be looking for the one. And it's always that one. Because we always got that one that's like this, that, you know. And I'm the one that, I'm coming like this. And I'm waiting for, you know. And she see me coming. Because there's something about the spirit that meets the spirit. You know, and one day she said, she called me a bitch, you know, and I get that regular, you know, but I'm grown, and I know that really that word holds no validity, depending on where I'm at spiritually. So, you know, I came in one day and she was like, bitch, you know, bitch. So I really wasn't spiritual, right? I hadn't prayed, and I was looking for the one. And I said, oh, the bitch ain't here. Now, I was talking about a mother. So she ain't get it. She was like, yes, she is. I was like, oh, no, the bitch is home. I wanted her to get it. And when I said that, I seen how she felt. Because she don't know her mother. So, you know what I'm saying? So that was a direct attack that I did. But that was because I didn't go to God when she was saying it. I didn't ask for help. I didn't say, God, listen, it ain't personal. I don't need to respond to what she say. I need to be more open, more loving and caring at this point. But sometimes I find in my character, it's difficult for me to get myself out of the way. And it talks about in this step, in order for us to work it, we got to let God do what we can't do and get out of the way. You know, And I say, you know, I think it is, you know, kids today are different. They say they're different to me, but they're the same damn kids that I was. They just ain't getting their ass whooped. But, and I think because of that, I hold a very strong personality where I really need to take it down sometimes. Even with my 11-year-old. If he buck, I'm bucking. You know, and it ain't he's bucking at me. He's being of age. But my thinking says, oh, he getting tough. You need to let him know, you know. And so those are the times that I ain't humble. And usually when I'm not, I'm humiliated. you know, either he ain't, you know, he go in his room and we doing like this in the house, passing, and, you know, that ain't a good way to be, you know. So I understand that I need God more than I really think I do, because he could work stuff out for me without my permission. You know, I just need to show up and do the footwork, you know, and which that is pray. You know, he gonna either work it out or he gonna work it away. That's my saying. Either he gonna work it out or he gonna work it away. You know, and when they said, it says in this step that some people get on their knees. I'm one of those people. I talk to God wherever I'm at. I loved when I didn't have a radio in my car. When I had a car that didn't have a radio, I thought I had the best connection with God at that time, because there was no interference. Now, it's up to me to turn it on, you know, but when I couldn't turn it on, it made it even better. So I was more apt when I was in my car to pray and say, God, listen, I'm on my way to work, or, you know, I'm on my way home and I need your help. You know, I ain't feeling too good in my spirit, you know, regardless of what me going on, you know, these flashes is driving me crazy, you know, all that. I was more apt to talk to him. When I have a lot of distractions, it seems like I less talk. I pray in the morning. I forgot to pray in the middle of the day. I forget to pray sometime at night, you know, because it'd be a whole lot of stuff going on. And I see how my character responds and react when I miss those prayers in between, you know, because I don't like feeling that I hurt somebody. Some days, you know, I used to say, suck it up. But because of the program that gave me a conscience, where I feel it, I might not act like I feel it, but I do. When I know that I have not practiced not saying some hurtful stuff, or just opening my mouth. Sometimes just be quiet. Just don't say nothing. You know what I'm saying? I always got to respond to everything, and that some days is a difficult thing to do, not respond. You know, but I did good coming, because I ain't say nothing when he changed the radio. I just drove and I, you know, started a conversation, you know, and I want to practice doing that kind of stuff. I don't always have to be so verbal. You know what I'm saying? I need to allow God in more and believe that he got my back, and he going to do things for me that I can't do for myself. You know, and sometimes age is a trap for me, because I think because I'm of age, you know, I should be able to, you know, do some things without any help. I need that shit more. I need it more. You know, I was explaining... Well, I was trying to explain to my husband about the hot flashes. And it's unexplainable. It, when it happens, just get out the way. That's the only way I can really explain it, because a lot of times when it happens comes the attitude, because I really want all this to myself, like you breathe in my air. You know, that's how it feels. And so I've been praying a lot, because I'm like, God, I need you to help me with this. I can't let this cause me to be so destructive. You know what I'm saying? This is something that I'm going to have to go through, and I got to go through it with you, because you gave it to me. You didn't give it to me if you knew I couldn't bear it. You know what I mean? And I find that I was thinking that I was the only person. You know, but then I started hearing more women. I was like, okay, I'm right. All right. Okay. You know, all right. You know, because it could be real destructive in my thinking and my responses to stuff. You know, I've been praying and asking him to give me a lot more patience, you know, and it's funny because I used to go to my, I work at a group home with kids, and I used to think that I was never stealing. But I used to bring paper towels home. And I find that small things that I think are not big things is the things that I really need to ask him to help me with, because it could become very big, you know. And I didn't talk about it. I didn't understand. I just thought because, you know, they had a lot, I could take one. You know, why ain't that petty, a whole lot, one, you know. And so my sponsor asked me one day, she said, let me ask you something. When you go shopping, do you put that on your list? I was like, no. She said, well, maybe that'll help you out. Put paper towels on your shopping list so you don't go there and shop. You know, so I said, wow. I never even realized that I wasn't putting it on my list, so it wasn't a part of my list. you know. And when I would open up the cabinet and I would see 50 paper towels, I would have to pray. Get one, put it in the kitchen, and close it. And so I begin to do that, and I haven't, nope, I think I took a roll the other day. But I got better, because it was every day. Every day I left, I took a roll, right? And it's the small instances that I think that I can control. I remember shopping till I dropped, right? And never asking for help. Didn't know really that I could get that kind of help. Couldn't understand how could he help me not shop, right? So I began to pray, like, God, please, I really don't have the money. I don't need nothing. And I didn't need nothing. It just was a thing that was done. If I went there, I bought something. If I had money, I had to buy something. It was just a fixed idea. So I had to pray to get that fixed idea removed. And I'm telling you, I could go to the mall. I could go to the outlet and come out and not buy nothing. That shit's a miracle. We're talking about somebody that went $35,000 in debt shopping. Shopping. And I remember when I went to the lawyer to file bankruptcy, he said, do you see any of that money? I said, it's in my closet. Wow. So today, before I go to the mall, I have a silent prayer. It's nothing that I need. I learn how to monitor what I need. So, you know, I gained weight. I was like real small when I got here, and then I was smaller, and I'm getting, I guess it's that old age thing. So I couldn't fit none of my jeans. So I said, okay, well, you know what? You do need jeans. So when I get paid, I buy one pair. I could never buy one of nothing. Nothing. When I first came here, one of nothing. I'd have to replace every 15 pair of jeans at one time. I couldn't just go, well, you know what, Lavinia, just buy one pair when you get paid. You don't got to buy them all. But my character was to buy them all back at one time, you know, because I had a thing of hoarding. I love stuff, even if it's just to look at it. I didn't never really wear a lot of it. The tags was always on it in the closet, but I like to open the closet and see stuff. So, you know, when it came to greed, because that was the defect, that I needed to ask him to help me, you know, not act out in a shortcoming, I began to pray. And I prayed humbly because it was an ass whooping. And when I find out is when I'm whipped in a particular area, I'm very humble. I'm praying more than once. I'm like almost begging because the pain is so severe. Because that was painful. You know, and it got to the point where it's painful when I could see stuff that I really didn't need. And then you don't have no money. That's painful. When you got clothes, but you don't have no money. Wow. That's some painful stuff. You could be sharp, but you ain't got no money in your pocket. So I really had to ask him to help me in that area. And he's been blessing me because I've been obedient. I've been very obedient. So now I'm on this thing now where I'm really trying to save money. And I think when I came into recovery, I really wanted everything back that I had lost, and I wanted a vengeance to get it. And I got everything back and more and some and plus, right? And after I did all of that, I said, I don't even need all this stuff. You know, now I want to get rid of it. You know, I got storage, a three-level townhouse, still got to have a storage. You know, now I'm sick of myself. And it says in this step that I don't come to him unless I'm sick of myself. Now, other people could say, girl, you need to stop shopping. Every time we see you, you got on something new, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't happen until I'm sick of myself. And when I begin to not have no space, got to pay mortgage, rent, and pay for storage, I was like, it's something the matter with that problem. When both seasons can't live in the house at the same time. You got to go there in the summer, take the winter out, put the winter in. That's a sickness. Really. So I asked him to help me. I said, I don't want all of this stuff. I don't need all of this stuff. I can't wear it. I can't even wear every pair of sandal in the summer. Ain't enough days. I only got 2 feet. And I had to get with that. Now, other people were saying that, girl, you only got 2 feet, you're going to wear all that stuff. I was like, I'm going to wear it. Don't worry about it. No, couldn't wear it. Couldn't wear it. So humbly, after all the pain of seeing all that stuff, not having no money, you know, I was looking at my clothes as money. I said, if I could take all that stuff and sell it and give it back and get my money back, I would do it. Because I started looking at it as money that I just used. So now, I'm grateful. Because I know God do things that I couldn't do. Because I used to go in that mall thinking I could window shop. Mm-hmm. No. I could window shop today. Because it's nothing that I need. It's nothing that I want. It's nothing. And that's a major accomplishment for me. Nothing that I need. Nothing that I want. Always had wants. Wants was always beyond my needs. And today it just ain't like that. I have got a level of maturity from working the steps that I am grateful for. And it doesn't happen every day. You know what I'm saying? But because I want to be in a different place in my life, I'm more humble than we're asking God. I'm 54. I said retirement gonna come so quick, gonna make my head spin. Gonna make my head spin. So now I'm at the point where I want to save money. You know, I'm putting more money into my retirement. Every time I get a raise, I say, put it there. You know what I mean? Because I don't want to work at 65, 70. I don't want to be flipping McDonald's. Because I see older people doing that. And I'm like, why are they still working? They should be enjoying themselves. You know, and I understand. Don't got enough money to live on. I don't want to be like that. When I say it's over, if I have a job, it's going to be my own business. But I need to continue to plug into the juice and able to do that. Because I like spending my money. But now what I do is say, you know what? I need to save some. So that's what I try to do. I can't save a whole lot. But my mother used to always say, put $5 away. I was like, she crazy. You know how long it's going to take you to get some money with $5? You know. But if I'd have put $5 away 21 years ago, I'd have had a few thousand dollars. You know what I'm saying? But I didn't think like that. You know, so I'm real grateful for the step working process. You know, God, my God is an awesome God. Awesome, awesome. He took me out of a place that I thought I could never come out of. He placed me in a place with a lot of beautiful, loving, and caring people. You know, and I began to want this thing. Right? I don't see no reason to go back and use. None. I love the life I live in spite of not having a whole lot of money most days, having a used car that might break down, but I'm still grateful. Grateful. Just grateful to be alive. Thanks for letting me share.
Done? You want to share in a seventh tradition too?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Still got time, right? Thank you.
Yeah, seven tradition.
Okay, they say this is the seventh tradition part. I'm an addict again. My name is Lavinia. And what I find is that, you know, we have that little pamphlet that says seven tradition states that we are fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And that's just a little part. Because when you read the literature, it's a whole lot more. You know, I was reading on the seventh tradition. And it was talking about how, you know, we need to continue as a fellowship to support our own self. You know, and I noticed, like, our fellowship has gotten huge. It seemed like we're getting bigger but less money. You know, when we were smaller, we had a lot more money than as we began to develop. Now, I know it's economy and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, it talks about everybody doing their fair share, you know, and it talks about not letting a member do more than their fair share, because then we got to worry about them saying that they got some kind of stock in here financially, you know, and it's just not like that. You know, what we do as a seventh tradition, we collect money, and the money goes from the groups, it goes to the area, then it goes to region, and then it goes on the world. And I remember being the treasurer of a area, and they were mad. They were mad at the, no, was it the group? They were mad. I was a treasurer of the area, but they were mad at some part of Narcotics Anonymous that they didn't want to let the money flow. I was like, huh? You know, they wanted to hold on to it every area meeting. I had so much money. You know, it was some decision that somebody was making that they weren't all right with, so they didn't want to further the money. So as a treasurer, right, I said, I'm not holding on to all this money because I got defects of character. I'm not taking home $3,000 and $4,000. Now that was before they had bank accounts where they would go to the bank and they would put the money in. We was taking that money home. Dangerous. You know, and so, you know, for whatever reason, I'm real grateful that the more experienced members, you know, came into the area, you know, we had a jack meeting and they talked about how we could not hold on to this money regardless of what we felt as an area. It needs to flow, you know, and that's real important that our money flow because we stand on our own. Now, we have other people that do other things, but I believe that money that we flow to them helps pay them. You know, and I'm grateful that I'm in a fellowship that I could pay my own way because I never paid my own way. When I was using, I was looking for somebody. I lived for free off of you. You was taking care of me. And this fellowship, through this tradition, taught me how to take care of myself. It really taught me how to begin managing my money, paying my bills, because I wasn't good at that. I wasn't good at that. And how I learned that was by being in service. Watch how we pay the rent at the home group and, you know, every month or however it be. You know, watch how we purchase literature and do all that kind of stuff. We are wonderful to be able to take care of ourselves. We're talking about mismanagers, people that never took care of themselves. We actually take care of our own, which is wonderful. We talking about people that never did that kind of stuff, that we have a worldwide fellowship that we don't have no outside funding from. People would love to come in and give us money and say, well, listen, we want a part of how this thing works, so we're going to pay you this so you can give us some information, and we are still able to say no. That's a beautiful thing because we suffer from greed. And that's wonderful that that has not happened in this fellowship. That we ain't saying we're going to let this corporation in and they're going to help us run this fellowship. They got accountants and this and that and that. And, you know, it's all us. Even when we deal with people in that matter, right, we pay them. They don't do us for free. When we got to use outside people, lawyers and all that kind of stuff for different stuff, we pay them. It's not they're doing us a service. Because there's always a small price that we're going to have to pay for anybody that do us a service. Because there's a lot of us. And they really want to know how all of us stay clean just with us. Just by carrying a Narcotics Anonymous message. We got to be doing something. I'm quite sure they're trying to figure that out. You know. Because I've been to many of places that couldn't help me stay clean. I was clean while I was in there. But soon as I got out, I couldn't handle it. Soon as I got out, I went back to the people, places, and things. Once I came here and I heard this life-saving message and I surrendered, I didn't go back. So this is precious. It's very precious to me. You know, and you know, I've been coming for a while. I try to put more than a dollar in because I make more than a dollar. You know, I did a dollar when I first came in. You know what I'm saying? Now if I have it, I put $2, I put $3 because this has blessed me. You know what I'm saying? The fellowship has blessed me to where I am right now. People are out of work. When I think about this fellowship and God, I got two jobs. And I said, it's only through here. So I want to keep this thing open. I don't want no outside interference. I want us to continue to run on our own funding. You know, and a lot of time what I see is that, you know, the fellowship is expanding. We have a lot of meetings. I don't know about in your area, but in my area, we have a lot of meetings. And sometimes our meetings can't support themselves. And it talks about it here how sometimes a member will go in their own pocket to support the meeting. Buy literature for the meeting. I haven't seen that done. I don't know. You know, but it talks about that it's been done. You know, buy literature for the meeting. You know, pay the rent for the meeting. But it's one of our members. You know, and I'm glad that we do that because, you know, we don't have a lot of meetings in churches anymore. But we used to. And the churches used to want us to, no, don't pay us, you know, just let us say in our sermon that, you know, we have Narcotics Anonymous. We want to pay you rent. So this way, you know, we don't owe you nothing. Or the, I remember I was at a meeting and the pastor came down and wanted to share, you know. Nah. Mm-mm. And he couldn't understand it. And we kept saying, no, we'll get with you, you know, and the secretary went in the back and, you know, but they figured because we were there that they had that right. But we had to explain to him, we pay you rent, you can't share in our meetings, you know, this is Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And I'm grateful that we pay our way so people can't do that, because if we were renting for free, he would probably figure that. Then he would say, oh, I want y'all to move because y'all not doing what we want you to do. And he could still say that, you know, but as long as we know we're following our traditions, we don't feel bad about stuff like that, you know. So I'm grateful that the fellowship has evolved. I'm so glad for our traditions because it helps us. You know, it says it keeps me away, it helps me deal with you, you know, but the steps help me deal with you. The traditions help me when I'm in service, you know, and I'm real grateful. And I understand that conventions, you know, still the money got to flow. You know what I mean? I mean, they used to say conventions is not NA, so I don't know. But, you know, it's not a meeting, but they still collect money. And that stuff still got to flow. You know what I mean? So I'm real grateful for the fellowship. You know, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep coming. I'm going to keep evolving. I'm not a finished product. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Charles. I'm still an addict.
Hi, Charles.
I'm really an addict because I had beer claws on my $25. I ain't want to. Anyway. Next speaker I have for you is Prentice J from Westchester.
Right.
Hi.
I don't want no elbows.
Yeah, good afternoon, family. I'm an addict. My name is Prentice. And it's a pleasure. I want to thank the Westchester Area Convention Committee. I want to thank them and I want to congratulate them on a job well done. This is their first convention. And it's a pleasure and an honor to be able to participate in it because I live in Westchester. And there was a lot of controversy with this thing jumping off and from the whole process. Mm-hmm. And for it to actually materialize in such a fashion, I'm impressed, right? And so I'm real grateful for that. And I'm right, Lavina, thank you for sharing. You know, my friend back there says, oh, she's did a wonderful job. You got your work cut out for you. And I'm real grateful that our literature tells us that sharing is not a competitive sport. You know, what we do is we share our experience, strength, and hope, right? And I'm real grateful for it. One of the things I saw, because I was one of those addicts that was in and out for years. You know, I didn't bounce up in here and grab a hold of this thing and ran with it, right? I struggled with surrendering to the seriousness of my disease, right? But one of the things that was necessary and that jumped out to me, and I always read it, because maybe before I knew friends, and if there's anyone new, I just need to welcome you to Narcotics Anonymous, right? And what happens if the pain is sufficient, based on your own experience, one day at a time, you don't ever have to use again, right? But it tells us right in the first tradition that no one can revoke our membership. I needed to hear that. Because I was in and out every couple of weeks, and once a month or so I'd pop in, and they would say, keep coming. Right? It said no one can revoke our membership or make us do anything that we do not choose to do. Sometimes I needed to understand that because, see, the core of my disease is self-centeredness. Right, I really think I know something. That's why it took me 6 years to get one. We follow this way of life by example rather than directions. We share our experience and learn from each other. You know, and it's real simple, right? I'm real grateful, man, when I got to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, the pain was sufficient. You know, I had a thorough ass whipping. I had gotten to a point where I was able to no longer rationalize my bullshit. I couldn't justify nor deny the hopelessness of my condition. I was truly defeated in all areas, and I'm grateful. I'm here only through grace and mercy. My high power saw fit to spare my life and allow me to do everything I needed to do. He allowed me to do, spared my life and allowed me to do everything I needed to do to finish up. And I'm grateful, because when I got here, I was in a state of reasonableness. The last time. You know, my clean date is February 26, 1995. I'm coming up on 17 years clean, right? Only through grace and mercy. And when I got here, it was real clear that there was something wrong with me other than the obsession and the compulsion that manifests itself in drugs. I used drugs for a lot of years, and I used drugs essentially for the effect. You know, I'm real clear on that. You know, I took a drink when I was really young, and it made me feel something I didn't feel prior to the drink. And I ran with that for a lifetime. So I know that it wasn't necessary peer pressure for me. I used for the effect. You know, it did for me what I thought I couldn't do for myself. As I've learned since I've been here, God does for me what I can't do for myself. And if I had known that years ago, I wouldn't have suffered so severely. I didn't know that there was a power that existed in my life that was caring for me. That all I have to do at one given day is do the best I can, and that one given day it might just be 30%. But my higher power always pick up the rest. I didn't know that. I was the type of addict that I always had to hustle, bustle. I had to always look for easier, softer way. And one of the reasons I never thought I was enough. You know, I always didn't feel good about myself, and I always looked for the easier, softer way. Right, not knowing that I didn't have to control everything around me. And I'm real grateful that when I got here in step one, and I talked about the hopelessness of my condition, that I realized in step one, right, and come here and I see people like Lavina, you know, like my friend back there that had been here for a while before me, and they were showing me a day at a time and was sharing their story, experience, strength, and hope, and things was changing in their lives. Because when I got here, I didn't see no way out of here. I got here, my family wanted nothing to do with me. They had wiped their hands off of me. They said, don't come here. I was stranded in New York from California, right? And they didn't want no more phone calls from Prentice. You're on your own. Not knowing that my higher power had me. So when I got here, my family had kicked me to the curb. I had absolutely no marketable skills. And the cops, the marshals, were a few steps behind me. They were looking for me. That's how I got to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Defeated in all areas. And what I share, and the people in my area, they always hear me say, and a lot of them mimic me, and what I say is that I had a thorough ass-whipping. I could no longer rationalize, justify, nor deny the hopelessness of my condition. I was open to suggestions, and I was willing to take a look at the hopelessness of my condition, my thinking, my attitude, my behavior, my disease that had manifested itself in total self-centeredness, self-centered fear. You know, because I wanted to give you an impression that I know, that I think I know, and I didn't know. But I had perpetrated a fraud all my life. I gave you the impression that I had it going on, that I was very secure in myself, that I could work it out. And I didn't have a clue. So that's one of the reasons I say I'm grateful. I'm so grateful, man, that I was willing to take a look at myself, and I was willing that the people that was here before me had laid the framework for a hopeless addict like myself, right? I took a risk. I did what we call a searching, fearless moral inventory. You know, I took a closer observation of myself. It said we saw through the confusions and the contradictions of our lives. And my life was full of confusions and contradictions, you know. And it wasn't a pretty picture. I used drugs essentially for the effect, because I was covering up pain, misery, suffering, and denial. Full of fear, you know. And it's really weird how you can have all this self-centered fear, but there's an ego that's in there. You know, having this ego that thinking that I couldn't let you know. And I played it off for a lot of years. I need to tell you that I was able to play it off for a lot of years, but it wasn't until I was slayed. The drugs had really beat me until I couldn't even front no more. You know, it's like I had a thorough ass whipping. It's like, you know, I can't play it off, man. You know, when I was able to hit a lick and dress the part and, you know, talk the part, you know, and, you know, like I had going on, and, you know. But my God, man, I'm like, you know, that's why we can't minimize, you know, if you knew and you struggled, we can't minimize the process of coming to believe. You know, and to think that in spite of myself, in spite of myself, that somehow that my higher power always intervened. I got here, I had a couple of bullet wounds on my body. I had been, you know, knocked upside the head a few times, a couple of stab wounds. And like I said, I came to the East Coast by way of Virginia Beach, and I was there a couple of weeks, and I picked up two felonies. By the time I got to New York, they were looking for me. You know, each felony, Virginia being a Commonwealth state, carried 20 years. You know, when they finally caught up with me almost 4 years in this process, they wanted to, you know, lock me up for a lot of years. But I say this, and I'll continue to say that I'm so grateful that the pain was sufficient that it didn't matter. In retrospect, you know, I wasn't thinking like this great person, but I was numb. The pain was so sufficient that when I was going through this process of being locked up in recovery, being faced with a lot of years in prison, and they wasn't backing back from it, I was real clear that using had never, nor would it be a solution to my dilemma. The pain was sufficient, right? So I walked through this, and I share that because that was my process of coming to believe, because when I got here, Lavinia, I had cursed God. I suffered so severely in my thinking, I couldn't think to believe that this in a dogma concept, that this thing that my parents tried to impress on me was doing anything for me. I couldn't see it. I mean, it's like I didn't want to be living the way I was living. Drugs had me living beneath the animalistic level. And I say that because you think many times just looking and you see a stray animal wandering, digging, fumbling through the garbage and so forth because they're hungry. And there was times when I would go days without eating and I'd come up on a few dollars and I would go use. So I say that I maybe been even beneath, you know, an animal. I was using and I couldn't help myself, and I couldn't understand it, that I was always, and I'm not, and it talks about in the seventh step, it's talking about, you know, being humble, right? And when you have pride, I'm not talking about prideful, I'm talking about having pride. I had no more pride. I was a person always liked to dress nice. I liked to be perceived as a person that was and I couldn't even play it off. I mean, I was a straight up bum. You know, and I couldn't understand why I was reduced to this animalistic state. You know, I kept coming back to the rooms because I wanted a different way, and I had heard your stories. I wanted to do better. I wanted help. I tried reaching out to this thing that you people were saying, God, you got to pray. And I would pray like a Baptist preacher, and I would continue to use. I couldn't understand that. I don't want to live like this, you know, and I kept coming back, and I kept coming back, and it's like, well, wait a minute, Prentice, what you got to do is you got to do the step work. Mm-hmm. You have to do some step work, and I did the step work, you know, and I would use again. And I was like, you know, what's going on? Make meetings. I made meetings all the time. I was making meetings, praying like a Baptist preacher, trying to do the work, and somebody said, wait a minute, hold on, Prentice. All that's relevant one day at a time, though. One day at a time, based on your own experience, you have to make the decision. Make the decision that I don't want to use, and then and only then, just like in the seventh step, is when my higher power comes alive and do for me what I can. I have to be in position. See, I can sit up here and I can tell you that I wanted to get off the whole stroll at 8 years clean. You know, I was still running around picking up prostitutes, you know. On a daily basis almost, that at 4 years clean I was still stealing, not even like the little stuff you're talking about, I'm talking about major stuff, international shit, because I had cleared up some, and that's where I come from, and it talks about it, that I brought that person into the rooms, you know, and I didn't just clear up and clean up and straighten up overnight. You know, but what happens is that when I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, as when using drugs, and this entity, the God of my understanding was intervening in my life, doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, sparing my life. This particular job that I was working on, right, in recovery, somebody had blessed me. I got here with no marketable skills. And I was stealing from these people. It was a import company, a manufacturing company. And I had set up people in New Orleans and California. I'm doing all kind of crazy shit, right? And my daughter, this was about 2 years clean, maybe two and a half years. My daughter in California was coming out. She was a younger girl, 12, 13 years old, to spend the summer with me. Now, this is a reality that was also a miracle because the family wanted nothing to do with me, and they were going to entrust my daughter to come spend the summer with me. I got her situated. I took a week off of work and got her situated and so forth and showed her around the little community that I live in, and I went back to work. And that day that I got to work, I got fired. You know, I got into it because of my self-centered shit. You know, you can't talk to me any kind of way. That's my boss, you know. And we in the middle of the flow, and I'm telling him, like, you know, we going there like I'm in the streets. Well, hell, you know. And he's like, well, you know, get out of here. And I'm like, what? You know, but anyway, but the reality of it is this, right, is that the pain was sufficient. That when I left that place, I was full of embarrassment and I was ashamed of myself, and I didn't know how I was going to provide for this young girl that I wanted to show her around New York. I wanted to impress her with how I had been uplifted. And now, and I didn't have nothing left. I didn't have anything in the bank, Steve. I didn't save the dime. I was living from paycheck to paycheck. You know, and but I'm talking about coming to believe in how the power that I had denied was intervening in my life, because only the pain of using was sufficient. I don't want to use drugs, because if I use drugs, I don't have a chance. I was able to pull myself together, something I never did, man. I see, because I always perpetrated a fraud. I couldn't let you know, because even then I was fronting on like I had it going on. I'm getting paid every day, and you know, we come in, we get our little, you know, kit and stuff, and we look in a certain way, and we come into meetings looking good and shit. And now I'm like, it's like I went straight to the 12 o'clock meeting, and I told on myself. I told on myself. That was something totally new for me. I talked about what had just happened, and it gave me the courage to go home and tell that little girl that that I've been fired. I don't have a job. Had a few hundred dollars in my pocket. That was my bankroll. And she said, "Dad, we're going to be okay." And I said, "Damn." You know, and I did what the next thing. I went and applied for unemployment. You know, and that's a whole, I'm not going to get into that. I fucked that up too, because I started working shortly after that. But I ain't going to get tied up too much into that, because that's another story. You know, but it was all this kind of behavior, because I came here, I was a real sick person. I came here really sick, man. And I'm grateful for that, because it allowed me to be able to recover. And like you were talking about, I didn't come here with thinking that about. I didn't even know what recovery, that concept eluded me, because I had no concept of recovering. All I know that I was coming here and I was seeing people glowing. People had shared their stories and their lives had changed. And I'm seeing them doing things that I wanted to do. And I'm thinking that was only because they stopped using drugs. And obviously that is the prerequisite of recovery. You know, but my concept at this time was, no, it's not about, you know, doing some work, uncovering so I could discover the shit that had me living like an animal, the things that had reduced me to not being able to care for myself or unable to care for myself, you know. And so I'm grateful that those things had transpired in my life, you know, that I was willing to come face to face with Prentice, the disease itself. And you people have been telling me that. You are the disease. I'm like, I am the disease. You know, the disease that manifests itself in my attitude, my behaviors. That I always was looking for the easier, softer way. I never thought much of myself. I thought that I needed something, an easier way. There always had to be an easier way. If you told me the shortest distance between two points was a straight line, my thinking would be, but maybe I can jump up. You know, I won't have to do it. And that's got to be a little bit shorter, because I need an edge. I need an edge to do this. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for you guys that came before me. I'm so grateful that the God of my understanding spared my life, allowed me to endure pain that I don't ever, ever, never, ever want to experience again. that I was willing to take a closer observation. I was willing to sort through the confusions. And it wasn't a pretty picture. It wasn't a pretty picture when I did a step five with my sponsor. And I saw a life that I had lived, a life that I don't want to return to. And so when I got to a point, and they talk about in step six being a defects of character and step seven being shortcomings, and that sort of also confused me, right? But, you know, and a lot of times we have different ways to say that. People say, well, the defects is acting out, or well, the shortcoming, whatever, shit like that. But whatever that meant, if you understood that, that's the way I was. But what rang true to me is when somebody said, well, friend, look at it like this. You know, is that a shortcoming, a defect being things that you were doing you shouldn't be doing, and a shortcoming being things that you should be doing that you're not doing. So now that was a whole lot of shit that when I got here I should have been doing, like even washing my ass on a regular basis, you know what I'm saying, trying to be productive and consistent in life, being accountable to my family and those that God put in my life, you know. Not being so controlling and trying to run everything and everybody around me. And I didn't know that. I didn't know something else that you guys share with me. And you tell me, Prentice, you know, that I was highly emotional and overly sensitive. I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? I'm like, emotional and sensitive? What? And then, wait a minute, Prentice. We're addicts. That. All of us possess that characteristics. Now it's masked. We mask that in different ways. I have friends and sponsors. Some mask it with comedy, some with laughter, with intellect, with spirituality, and some even with the you know, the frown, the prune look, you know. Because see, I can't let you know that I'm this little kid inside, that I'm full of fear. You know, I don't know how to do this. I could never let you know that. And once I matured physically, I definitely couldn't let you know that I was a very sensitive person. And it's so weird, man. It's like, there was something I was watching on television. I think it was a commercial. And I found myself with a tear in my eye. I'm watching a damn commercial and I'm tearing up. That's how sensitive I am today. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is that because of the work I've done, I'm not controlled and I don't have to hide that. I don't have to hide my sensitivity or my emotions, my untreated emotions sometimes. But what I found out also is that when I put God first in my life, is that I don't have to act out on my self-centered fear, right? And self-centered fear, you know, and we're talking about disease and we talk about humility. And when I thought about humility, I mean, it's like, you know, humility, shit. You know, I ain't trying to be humble, man. You know, because we used to roll like, you know, I got mine, you get yours. I'm the great I am. You know what I'm saying? That kind of mentality. And I ain't wasn't the great I am or couldn't get nothing for a long time. Get 50 cents to come up on something, you know. But I still had the mentality and the thinking, you know. And it says, no, Prentice. You know, that's not the humility of what we're talking about. I'm talking about the humility of tolerance and patience. The humility of being able to be still and allow God to do for me what I could never do for myself. I'm talking about having the sensitivity, man, to want to work with somebody else and want for you what I want for myself. I'm really grateful, man, that God spared my life and allowed me to do. Does that mean 3 minutes to complete this, or do I have 3 minutes to also work in the seventh tradition? 3 minutes to do the seventh tradition. Okay, so let me just real briefly try to wind down the seventh step, right? And it's like we're talking about a shortcoming, right? And the good news, and Levita, you kept talking about it, and I'm going to hit it off too, and I'm not just piggybacking off you, but and we were talking about the human aspect of that. You know, and I kind of wanted to get into some stuff that's going on with me, but I guess I start babbling too much. I do that too. Because I want to talk about some things that's going on today, just this last night, with the humanism of my disease. Because, see, I still want to run some shit. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, I'm so grateful that I have a program that God will back me up and slow me down. You know what I'm saying? And allow me to put things in its proper perspective, right? But also, just real briefly on the
Southern tradition. The Southern tradition is that we are self-supporting, right? The program of Narcotics Anonymous is self-supporting, and I'm real grateful for that because, see, our primary purpose is staying clean. Our primary purpose as a group is providing an environment that's conducive to staying clean. We don't want, because see, we hustlers up in here, man. Everybody up in here, man, we know how to turn two nickels into a quarter. Man, come on. You know, and see, I ain't never been one to hustle in Narcotics Anonymous. I've never been one to sell stuff, and I'm not, I got friends and sponsors that do it. I ain't talking about that. I'm not trying to put it down. I didn't come here with that mentality. And I'm so grateful that the reality of it is that it doesn't exist. Our primary purpose is staying clean and providing an atmosphere to stay clean, right? So what we focus on is that we talk about, and my friend back there just hit me off a month or so ago. I was at a meeting and I dropped a dollar in the basket, and I get a tap on the shoulder. Yeah, oh, after 17 years, you're still on foot, but a dollar in the basket. I say that bitch, because that's my friend, you know. But I went in my pocket, and since that time, I've been putting more money in the basket, because I realized that the world don't work for us. I mean, it's the world, we don't work for the world. The world works for us, and they need to exist. They have a staff. They provide us with the literature, and it trickles down from our area to our region, and it just trickles down, and they need the money, and it's self-supporting. And long as we can keep these people from trying to get a little bit of peace, a little bit of action, a little bit of piece of this, we've existed now for like almost 58 years.
Right.
And I say this in closing, because it always just mystifies me when I think about the various corporations that I'm talking about, Fortune 500 corporations that's been resolved, that no longer exist. We're talking about countries that no longer exist. And here we are, what they talk about, a bunch of misfits, a bunch of derelicts, you know, a bunch of losers. That's how we were perceived in a lot of ways, you know. And here we are still alive and flourishing after 58 years. Only through grace and mercy. Only through the traditions, the ties that bind us together. You know, I'm real grateful again and for the Westchester Area Planning Committee that labored, they did a lot of work, they endured a lot of negativity and adversities to make this thing happen. And you know what? I'm just grateful that they allowed me to participate in the convention today, and thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
And Charles and Abby, I guess we got a nice way to close.
How's that going?